The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guest, and the callers, and not necessarily those of Independent 1310 KXAM.
From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and this is a show where we deal with mental health issues every week from a holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit. And we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? How long are you willing to wait? How long are you willing to not listen to the inner voices that are guiding you to a higher purpose? And before we get into today's purpose of this show, I want to acknowledge my sponsor, the Rainbow Mobile Notary Services, and Charles King. Now, as a nation, we all recently witnessed the unfortunate events and circumstances surrounding Terri Schiavo. Each day, hundreds of individuals face difficult life-altering decisions and are not properly prepared. Don't let this happen to you. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Services help you. We all tend to avoid stressful, emotional, and financial charged issues and convince ourselves it's never going to happen to me or I have plenty of time. I don't need to deal with this now. For your own peace of mind and for the well-being of those you love, don't wait or procrastinate. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Services assist you with living wills, trusts, estate planning, and medical power of attorneys and much more. Plan now. Prevent problems later. Get those medical power of attorneys done so that you don't find yourself in the same situation or a loved one of yours doesn't find you in the same situation that this whole country went through with Terri Schiavo. So in order to get these papers notarized at your home, at your office, even in a hospital room, call Rainbow Mobile Notary Services at 480-518-2090. That's 480-518-2090, or you can visit their website at rainbowprof.com. That's rainbowprof, P-R-O-F, as in professionals, rainbowprof.com. Now, remember, they'll come to you and help you get this and help create some peace of mind. And that's what this show is all about, is creating peace of mind. Now, today I'm very excited about today's show because it's an issue that I believe is at the center of most of our lives, and that is, are you living your life's purpose? Are you living your life's purpose? Many of us, I know myself as a kid, I knew that I was here for something. And it, you know, was something that I wasn't doing yet, even as a kid. And I know that some of you who are listening can probably relate to this, that there was a consciousness, a knowingness inside you, even as a child, that said, I'm here to do something. What is it? Now, life's purpose can unfold and show itself to us at different parts in our lives and in different ways, okay? A life's purpose for somebody can be writing a book that impacts the whole direction of society. A life's purpose can be becoming a teacher to help mold minds, but a conscious teacher, a teacher that, I mean, we all can attest to teachers we've had that we knew should never have been in the classroom. I could think of at least four of them through my years that were actually very abusive and humiliated the kids and didn't have a real sense that they were there for a higher calling. And most teachers know that they're there for a higher calling. And unfortunately, many teachers don't have the support of the financial support for the school system and things like that, but they still make do. They still raise above that. That's somebody who knows their life's purpose. So it may be something big. Your life's purpose may be being home and raising those children and raising them with the highest consciousness you can, with the most amount of love you can, and leading them to take their next steps. So life's purpose, when we get it, becomes crystal clear. And I actually want to open by reading a couple of paragraphs from a letter that I wrote to my nephew Max on December 21st, 2003. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because some of it's very personal, but it's something that after I saw the Lord of the Rings Return of the King, the third part of the trilogy, I came home, sat in front of the computer, and it was one of those channeled things, if you want to call it that, that just started flowing from me. And it was kind of a letter where I felt my purpose at that time was to say some things to my nephew. So it reads in part, "If you have not yet seen the third of the trilogy, I invite you to do so with eyes that see more than the fantasy, adventure, and effects of the characters and movie makers. If you have not seen the first two, rent them first. This is a tale of love, hope, and passion for what one believes in. It is a tale of the goodness of all beings and all and things of this world and the brotherhood we share with all. From all other human beings, everything on and of the earth, and all who come before and those yet to come. It is a map of the path we are all put here to travel. Some of us are asleep to this and live in fear of being seen as different. Others are here, born with this knowledge in our consciousness, and are charged with embracing the assignment fearlessly and joyfully to teach the others how to awaken to the same conscious connection and travel the path as one. There are ring bearers and those that carry the ring bearers. Both are heroes, but in a sense, those of us that are the ring bearers could not move forward without those that see us for who we are and to help us and help keep us safe and are the voice and are our voices of reason and love." And then later in the letter I write, "The risks that are awaiting you serve a greater purpose and will be there to help you discover yourself. They will assist you in discovering your light and finding pleasures of living in it. There is nothing to fear. The fear you think you experience will soon turn to excitement. You will increasingly crave that excitement, for you will see how much good you are doing and how much more light you see glowing around you because of your actions and efforts. It will bring results that will help you feel good about yourself and clearer in your purpose. That purpose and its exact path may not be made clear for some time. You are in training, but when you are truly ready, that purpose will be evident and the right guides will be there. In the meantime, learn what you can. Teach what you can through your words and actions, and be patient. Patience is a trait that does not come easily for either one of us, but it is part of the lessons we must learn." This is about purpose. So that's what I wrote to my nephew Max. And the letter was long. Actually, when I reread it earlier, I actually had tears in my eyes because I could feel the connection and what I believe is a purpose of mentorship in my nephew's life. So with all that being said, I want to introduce to you my guest today. And I've been reading her book, which is titled God as Mother by Victoria Jennings. And Victoria and I are both going to be presenters at a conference that's taking place in Arizona, in Sedona, Arizona, actually, from September 16th through the 18th of 2005. And the name of the conference is Celebrating the Divine Feminine. And we'll be talking more about it on this show today, and I'll be talking more about it in the weeks to come before September 16th. So I'd like to introduce to you Victoria Jennings. Like I said, she's a lecturer and author of God is Mother, and her story is quite incredible, and we're going to be talking about that. Victoria, there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the show today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm actually very excited having you on today, and I have read God is Mother up through part I haven't read part four yet.
Okay.
Because I knew that to read part four, I really needed to take my time with it.
Absolutely. I can relate.
Yes. So I didn't want to rush through it, but the rest, the book before that is something I really resonated with. And I know the foundation of this book is a relationship you had with a woman named Marie Bauer Hall, who lived here in Los Angeles with her husband, Manly Hall, who is the founder of the Philosophical Research Center, not far from where I live.
That's right.
And to start and lay the foundation, Marie talks about, and you quote her, when you talk about life assignment, or as I'm calling it on the show, life's purpose.
Exactly.
I just want to quote a paragraph that is quoted from Marie in your book.
Mm-hmm.
A person's life assignment is an obligation to life that must be fulfilled. It is our true purpose, somewhat like a ship destined to take us to our destiny. There is no peace unless you are fulfilling your life's assignment, for there is an unquenchable thirst, an emptiness and longing that only it can fill. Though it may not yet be revealed, your life's assignment lies waiting in the innermost recesses of the human spirit, its drama. This histo-tragic comedy of life waits to unfold. Its presence is undeniable, its patience unlimited. Until you take your first humble step, and then with that step, the pattern within you is ignited. You are filled by a sudden thrust of energy and stamina to complete the task at hand. For this is the divine energy of life that molds our being as we are swept away, driven to our destiny.
Right.
Basically, that's what I said to Max in that letter. I mean, there's a common thread that I think intertwines all of us, where the same thoughts and the same issues and sense of purpose is an inner knowledge we're all born with.
That's right.
And certain people make certain statements. Now, I specifically remembered my letter to Max because I got the connection between Tolkien and Jackson, who was director of that trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the same connection I see between Marie and you. Tolkien wrote this amazing, amazing trilogy that really unfolded such metaphysical and higher thoughts and purpose in the context of an amazing story. But for many people, it's a hard thing to get through. Jackson then took it and put it on a screen, which, through audio and visual,
right,
made it more accessible to more people. And as I was remembering that, I realized that's exactly what you did with Marie's work.
Right.
Marie's work is just, it's amazing, but as your book describes the struggle even you had to finally connect and raise your own vibration to really absorb it all, that her words and a lot of other things, for the most part, made it inaccessible to most people. But it took someone like you, willing and knowing that, as you said in the book, you realized at a certain point, going through her papers and organizing them and stuff became your life's purpose. And you wrote a book that now made it more accessible for people to understand what came through her.
Right. That was the feeling of it. I mean, when I wrote those two paragraphs that you just quoted right now, Marie had always said, okay, this is what you're experiencing, a life assignment, this is a life assignment, that kind of thing. But I have to tell you, oftentimes we want to go away from our life's assignment, or we think it's not our life's assignment because
mm-hmm.
maybe it looks too difficult or it's going to demand too much of our time or
right.
energy. I know lots of people say, oh, I got to finish school. But then they don't go and finish school because, oh, well, you know, I don't have this time. But it's not about finishing school. It's not about that piece of paper. What it's all about is that there are certain elements within that whole life assignment of your going to school, that you will find the disciplines that are necessary to refine you as you are on that process.
Mm-hmm. So it's not the diploma, it's the journey to it.
Exactly. It's always
and many people who never got the paper itself still found something that lit the spark that made them go on to greatness within their own context.
Absolutely. There are some of the greatest minds in history that don't have that piece of paper.
Right.
The thing is that they did have the insight, though, and the courage and the trust, because it takes a deep-seated trust to believe that there is something higher than yourself, than mm-hmm. your ego that is guiding you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard to trust a higher intelligence that doesn't have your own self-interests at heart, right?
The truth is the higher intelligence always has our best interests at heart. It's trusting that's so difficult.
Exactly.
It's like jumping off the cliff and knowing that either you'll learn how to fly or somebody will catch you.
Right.
You know,
right.
That old saying.
Well, so, you know, one of the things that I had studied, because I was always interested in this whole thing about purpose and destiny, because as I had said, I myself would wonder, you know, on this first book, it took me 10 years. My second book, which comes out in the fall, called Path of Selfless Love, only took me 5. So I'm hoping my next book will only take me 2.5. But the point is that I came to understand that basically my purpose was my destiny. It became my destiny. And I do have one thing I'd like to read to you. It's just like a brief paragraph.
Sure.
Our innate drive towards a state of perfection is our purpose. Without this, man lays in waste. His wasteland becomes his prison, and his fear of change, the chains that bind him further to this illusion, separating him from becoming consciously aware of his true destiny, that is, to return to the source.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at the word purpose as being my destiny, and my destiny is that return to the source. Now, how I get there is I am going to go through what I call fate. In other words, that's God's divine plan at work. I mean, I met my own husband at fate. You know, I go into a restaurant, only one chair opens up. It's, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we all have experienced fate stepping in. But I definitely differentiate between life assignment and purpose now that I'm more soul mature than when I first started this book,
mm-hmm.
is because a life assignment is more like part of the process of getting you to your destiny.
Uh-huh.
You see? Getting to you, that purpose is your destiny.
Excellent.
And so what happens is that we all take on these different things. Now, when we talked about that obligation in life that must be fulfilled, we have to be so honest with ourselves and willing to suffer the pain of it even coming out to show itself, because it's very painful for some of us to have to deal with things that we didn't fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
So once you can move into that space with, okay, I'll take a look at it. What is just driving me? What is aching? What is yearning inside of me to be finished or completed or move toward? What's the direction?
Mm-hmm.
Am I being... Because otherwise, you see... Evolution is innate. You know, it's built into every cell and atom of our bodies, every electron in the universe, anything, to return to that source. That's evolution in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a process. We each have a different process or a different path that we carry out this divine plan, which is basically our return.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's time for us to decide whether we're going to take it on or not. Because the longer we take to take on these things that we need to fulfill, the sooner that fate has to step in, take away our free will, and sort of push us into the right direction of where we will meet that evolutionary pattern that we've already started.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So it's all sort of works together. See, we have free will, which governs our choices that we make. But the thing is that these choices that we make also govern our fate. Well, fate is the process. Those are the different experiences that purify us and will ultimately lead us to our destiny. And your destiny, my destiny, all of our destinies are basically the same, and that is to return to the source or the one.
Now, I know that I have listeners out there that may be reacting very strongly to this. I just want to remind them that this is a live show, and you're welcome to call in and either add to the conversation or ask a question of myself or Victoria. And the number in Phoenix is 480-949-1310, 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the Internet from outside of the Phoenix area, it's the same number, 480-949-1310. Now, so basically to recap here, there is, and I agree with you on this, that there's a difference between life's purpose and life's assignment. life's purpose is the same for all of us, which is, in a sense, to return to the light.
Right.
And to take and to find that higher consciousness, or as I keep calling it, a higher vibration that we live by, mm-hmm. that actually becomes a living by example, which is living in love,
that
living in a sense space of integrity, with and realizing, as I said in the letter to Max, and I'm not sure it was in the paragraph that I read, that, you know, that we're not seeing each other's differences, that we see the oneness in all of us and all our minds are connected.
Well, it's hard to see the interconnectedness when we have our egos, which are set on the state of individualization.
Right, which is very similar to what Course in Miracles says a lot, which is, you know, that the only thing that's real is love, and that the ego is what is there that keeps us separate from that.
Right, right.
And the whole healing is to heal the fear that creates the ego so that we surrender and embrace the light and the love.
Well, another thing that I had found in my own work is it actually went even beyond fear itself. I always thought that fear would be the ultimate. And then come to find out, after researching all this for 5 years, I found that lack is even greater, because there's a sense of lacking something, a lack of security which causes fear, or a lack of this that makes you feel angry, or a lack mm-hmm. of love that makes you feel this loneliness.
Right.
You know, so I'm sensing that this lack is actually a mirroring of our need to return.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we just put it out into this illusionary world as a sense of fear or anger or all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
But there was another thing that I was going to mention at the onset when I mentioned about perfection, you know, driving or striving towards that perfection. I don't want people to think that perfection is the kind of perfection that we see in this physical world. I have this really interesting dream that I had. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with lucid dream experiences. Those are those ones that are as real as can be, just like regular life.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in that dream I heard a voice say, the rose. The rose of imperfection. It's in the garden. It's in the garden. And I heard this voice. I turn around. I see this beautiful garden. And in the middle of that garden was the most magnificent rose. And I'm looking at this rose, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, the colors and the shape and everything about it was so divine. And just as I was thinking, how could you possibly call this rose imperfect, I woke up. Now, there I was with this dilemma. I couldn't figure out why the voice said that. And for 3 days, like a Zen cone, I was focusing on it and studying it and thinking about it. And finally, on the third day, it finally came to me, and I heard the voice say, if it had been perfect, it would not have been there for me to see. It
wow.
would have already been drawn in. It would have already been part of that oneness.
Uh-huh.
So I don't want people to think that that's it. What we're trying to do is we're trying to model the life essence within us.
Mm-hmm.
That essence that flows through us, that animates our being, that's the part our body is longing to be a part of, and that's why it's built into everything that we are, this need to return.
Well, and there's a difference between the perfection that the ego mind thinks
right.
of, which as long as the ego mind's defining perfection, then we're always going to feel inadequate.
Exactly.
Because when it's something the ego mind's telling us, you have to attain, but you never will.
But if you're believing that the ego is your, or the ego mind, which I call the natural mind, I actually differentiate between the three minds of man, but
mm-hmm.
but using your phraseology, the ego mind itself, if you feel that that's your identity, how can you see any other? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
How could you see anything that was any different
right.
than the perfection of a beautiful home or a car or the money in the bank or all these other things, you know?
Yep. Now, let's talk about Marie for a minute.
Sure.
Okay? And I know you love to do that anyway, I'm sure.
Yes.
Without getting into too much detail, because we could do probably about 10 shows just on
yes.
her story.
yeah.
And Marie Bauer Hall, as I said earlier, lived here in Los Angeles, and was the husband of Manly Hall, who founded the Philosophical Research Center, which some people may know of as a place that brings together all schools of thought. and is there for philosophers and people to give lectures and to study, and it's in the Los Feliz area of Los Angeles. Now, Marie is, as I told you last week, is somebody that I actually met in Moscow back in January of 1990.
I know, that's what I was so surprised at. I couldn't believe it.
And it was like, I think it was, there was only like six or eight of us invited
right.
up to her room. We were there for a Soviet American Citizens Summit meeting that was organized by a woman named Rama Vernon. And it was... Somehow I was told, come on up, we're gonna meet this woman named Marie Bauer Hall, and she's going to talk to us.
Right.
And we sat in the room, and she talked about the story of Bruton Hall and the Masons and the founders of this country. And it was really interesting because I don't know if you saw the movie
National Treasure.
Basically, it must have been someone that read Marie's work because it was just like, it was the same story she talked. They just changed the location of the church.
Except this is a true story. Let's make sure the listeners know the difference.
Right, but it had to have been someone that had studied her work because the overlaps were just incredible.
Well, basically, just a real brief synopsis for everybody. Basically, Marie had worked for her husband at his museum. And she had discovered a rare book there that contained a code, and the code described a vault that was buried beneath a graveyard in Williamsburg, Virginia. This is a true story. It happened in 1938. So she goes to Williamsburg to dig up the vault, ends up fighting with the Rockefellers, and to make a long story short, I meet her 50 years later, and I find thousands and thousands of sheets of paper everywhere and giant
in her house.
And rubbings and tracings from tombstones, and I'm wondering what all this stuff was. And come to find out that as a result of her search for the vault, she began to have visions on how the universe began and all. And ultimately, I found out that basically her teachings were the secret teachings of Jesus as taught within the mystery schools of Mary Magdalene. So it was quite fascinating. But again, you could do 10 shows on all of this, but the point is that this whole Bruton vault, search for the vault, is what basically was her life's assignment.
Right.
It's what she used as her purpose. And everything that she lived and breathed for was to understand the nature of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I must say this, because I was thinking about a question that we had talked about before, and it was in regards to how did Marie find her purpose. And I looked at my own life, and I said, how did I find my purpose? And I realized that it always came along with what we call a second hit. You know how they say that in your genes you might have, like a mother might have a propensity towards cancer, and then she has five kids, but maybe only one of the children come down with cancer, the other four don't, or any disease or whatever it may be that's part of their gene pool. Well, because it takes a second hit to actually ignite it. In other words, an experience in that child's life that then sets everything into motion. It could be a stress. It could be whatever influence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I started thinking, well, what was my second hit? It was already part of my genes. In other words, whatever went on in my other previous lifetimes to set me up for this position that I'm in this lifetime, it was already there. What was my second hit? And I remembered it. I was sitting in my chair in my living room at my home. And I remember somebody said, oh, you can't know God. It's impossible. That's beyond human understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at him, and I remember sitting up, and I guess in just this weird childlike way, I just said, well, if I can't understand God, then there's no purpose for my being.
Uh-huh.
I just looked at him, and he just was shocked, and the whole room got quiet, you know, because I didn't have any other purpose. I just came, you know, at that moment. I'd never thought of that until someone told me that I couldn't have it, you see.
Right.
That was the second hit. And in Marie's life, her second hit was a totally a different way, where somebody came in. She was waiting on the train depot in New York at the time, and he came, and she had missed the train. She's standing there all alone. There's nobody else there. And this man comes up. You see, there's fate. Man comes up. Why? Because she was ready. And I'm saying this so your listeners understand that this is all about being prepared. And I know life gets tough and you're going through all this stuff, but you're being readied. And when the time comes, boy, it hits you like a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And this man said to her, how long do you have to wait? She goes, gosh, about an hour and a half, hour and a half. And he goes, well, why don't you go down to the Pythian Temple? It's only a block or two from here, and go listen to a lecture. And she says, okay, I think I will. So she goes over there, and guess who's there? Manly P. Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his last lecture there in New York before coming to California to open the Philosophical Research Society. Now, you see how fate steps in?
Mm-hmm.
And so even you, as a boy, there was something in your nature. There was something there. All your experiences of feeling alone or whatever it may be that made you really search within to go in and develop yourself to that point, that was all sitting there, resting there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you took the second hit.
Well, I can tell you when my second hit was.
Go ahead.
Because, and I've mentioned this on the show before.
Uh-huh.
Part of it was a brief visit to L.A. and being in the airport and this energy racing through my body and saying I'm supposed to move here. I was living in South Florida at the time. And I listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, people thought I was crazy, and so did I. But after I got here, within the first, as I was leaving Florida, my best friend gave me a copy of The Course in Miracles and you know, signed it for me and with a very nice note. And for some reason, I didn't just put it on my bookshelf. It was always on my nightstand for like a couple of months before I even opened it. But within the first 3 weeks after moving to L.A., I was in a car accident. I'd gotten a speeding ticket. Someone broke into the garage in my apartment building and stole this really good bicycle of mine. And then one night I was leaving a bar at about 1 in the morning, and three guys jumped me and stole my watch and my wallet.
Oh.
And when I moved to LA, a number of people kept telling me, there's this woman named Marianne Williamson who was giving these lectures on this thing called The Course in Miracles. And I said, well, that's the book my friend gave me. And they kept saying, it's a great place to go. Lots of people always there. It's a great energy. And you should go. And I kept saying, yeah, I'll go. Well, the next morning, it was a Friday night that I got mugged. And the next morning I woke up and I said, I think it's time to go to her lecture.
There you go. There you
and
go.
I walked in there, and her topic that day was victims.
I'm sorry.
That was mine. that was the beginning of a journey that was, like, amazing. I was going to three lectures of hers a week. I ended up working for her and helping to open the L.A. Center for Living.
Oh, my God. But you needed all that. You see?
I needed all that to finally... In a sense, what gets a lot of people into therapy is that they have to be in enough pain to cry uncle.
Isn't that sad?
And that's what I think was happening to me. I needed enough to say, I need to do something different here.
Well, you know, in my work, I always say to everybody, is this the amount of struggle you're going to need to get your ego out of the way?
Mm-hmm.
You may have thought at that time, well, I don't need that. I got enough here. I'm going to get this thing under control here. And then it kept coming and coming until you finally surrendered it.
Right. Well, the whole line of events, you know, Marianne Williamson, I started to go to Louise Hay's group called the Hayride because a lot of my friends were dealing with AIDS, and it was the area that I was beginning to focus on in terms of my own work, and my whole life was encased in it in terms of all the loved ones I knew. Marianne and Louise and Science of Mind and Sandra Ray and Rebirthing, and the Rebirthing led me to a international conference with Sandra and her group, and that led me to meet Rama Vernon, which led me to Moscow, where I met Marie. And now my connection with you. So it's like I could see the line that connected my beginnings to talking to you now.
it's a complete circle. I was just saying is that Ernest Holmes actually knew Marie. He was very close friends with Manly. He In fact, I even see pieces of Marie's work even in there, because remember, Marie had written her work, it was back in 1938.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, and I see little pieces here and there in different authors that I knew had visited them, you know, Manley and Marie. So it's interesting how that whole group kind of worked together at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole nother group coming in. I was just talking about it with my friend here. I said, you know, we're getting a whole new slew of teachers coming in again.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is because as our consciousness is I say smoothed out, perfected, you know, worked over, so to speak, we're moving into a whole new genre, a new whole way of thinking, as Marie puts it, new dimensional thinking, because we're recognizing the multi-dimensional properties of life itself.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you're probably most of your listeners are already familiar with the movie What the Bleep.
Yeah.
I mean,
in fact, I had the director on my show a few months ago.
Oh, see, I think that that movie really, really opened a lot of doors for a lot of people. I really do. I think that that movie is indicative of showing our choices of free will.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, well, what reality do you really want to live?
Mm-hmm.
In my own work, when I'm working with other people and trying to help them figure out this whole array of life and get away from the victim, feeling of victim, and to move toward a more purposeful life. I'm always saying to them is just that, look, if you could just trust, if you could just let go, if you could move beyond, yes, we know that you suffered in the past. Yes, we know you didn't have the right parents or you didn't get to go to school or you didn't get to do this or that. But guess what? You have a choice. You have this wonderful opportunity right now to change your entire life, and that's where purpose comes in. That's where you have to be aware and awakened so that you can see your life's assignment working in your life, because it's never, ever left.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it's buried somewhere between the ego and our wants and our, you know, all those other things that we think we're supposed to have.
Right. Well, you want another coincidence, if there's such a thing. I forward this to you. I got an email last night, and I forwarded it to you today, so I don't know if you got it yet.
Oh, no, not as yet.
But a friend of mine named Gustavo Rex, who studies a lot of this stuff, and he has a teacher named Georgia, and she had emailed all of them, all of her group, an excerpt from one of Manly Hall's books.
Uh-huh.
Just yesterday. It's excerpted from, where is it? Secret Destiny of America.
Right, Secret Destiny of America, right.
And it talks about how the Founding Fathers, you know, knew that their life's assignment was signing that Declaration of Independence,
right,
and setting into motion what happened after that. And they knew it so clearly that they knew that if they did not win, all of them would have been tried and hanged as traitors, that they were willing to put their lives on the line for something that was a higher calling.
That's right.
And many of them did die. Many of the signers of the Declaration of Independence died destitute because the British destroyed their wealth. Many of them were caught and tried and killed. Some of them died during the war. So many of them truly did put their lives on the line for this higher calling.
That's right.
So I just thought it was interesting how I've never gotten anything from Manly Hall in my email, and the day before I'm interviewing you, here it is.
There you go. That's how life works. Well, you know, there's definitely a divine plan
yeah.
to work. And if you take the word America anagrammatically, it comes to I am race. I know that some of your listeners may know about it or may not, but basically, this whole divine plan of America, its purpose for America was to basically have a place where all men of all nationalities and religions, etc., would all live together.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, this information could be worked into our minds, so to speak, on one level, and then carried genetically to our children and onward.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, it was to move towards a one-world spirituality, not a one-world order.
Right, and not a one-world religion.
No.
And that's important
that's right.
that people get that. We're talking about one-world spirituality,
that's
where
right.
people honor the different modes that people may honor that spirituality.
Right.
Instead of what we see going on in the world today, with all the terrorism and killings and Israel and the Palestinians and the Catholics and the Protestants and the Hindus and the Muslims and, you know, all that stuff. It's talking about one world spirituality.
Right. That's right.
Which is one of honor and integrity.
Exactly.
So finish what you were saying. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, no, it's okay. I just wanted to say with this one world spirituality, I could start, as I kept going, because there were a few things that Bacon, this was all based on Sir Francis Bacon's work and the Masons, by the way, just for the listeners who just popped in. Basically, they said that they needed the tools. So who better than the father of modern science, right, Sir Francis Bacon, to pull it all together. And if you recall in my book, I talk about how audiovisual, just what you were saying, how there it was in the movie,
mm-hmm.
and how audiovisually, the reason why spirituality is so important by using audiovisual means is because with our natural minds kept busy breaking down everything, those bits and pieces of it flashing before us, what happens is that our soul minds, the truth of that, what we're seeing, while our natural minds are hearing it and seeing it and breaking down those pixels of the television or the movie or whatever, there's another part of us that is reaching much deeper and can then extrude from it, pull from it the most important essences of what it is that movie maker is trying to, you know, share. Now, of course, you can say, well, they could be sharing negative stuff or they can be sharing positive stuff. That's true. But that makes movie industry need to be very responsible for
right.
what they show.
Right.
But that's not to say that that's not an important tool. That is very important.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that he said that he needed enlightened men or women put in strategic positions throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing, and that's even yourself. Here you are, a radio show. So these things that you, bits and pieces of life and spirituality, those are all helping individuals who are just tuning in, or all of a sudden they have this strange pull. There you go, fate, turning on their radios for no reason at all in the middle of the day. Here we go. And all this is set up ahead of time. You're being put in this position to share this information,
mm-hmm.
to help us, give us the information so that we can recreate our realities with the proper information. Because if we are limited to whatever we have in our little neocortex of our minds, as Dr. Joe Dispenza speaks, who is from the movie What the Bleep, then what happens is we are limited to that information. If we don't get new information in there, we're going to keep creating this same reality over and over again.
Right. And that's the problem with people who get into a doctrine and stay stuck in it and are not willing to expand.
You got it.
To understand that there's more to what is in those books than its
That's
interpretation by certain leaders or certain groups.
Anything. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You're right on that, and I hope your listeners hear what you're saying, because this is a critical piece of life itself. When we get it, we go, I understand now. You know, the first thing I tell myself is, wow, if I can get there and I understand it from that point of view and from that place that I'm in now, can you imagine how much more there is?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm just getting it at this age, what is going to happen 10 years from now?
Right.
Or five, mm-hmm. or one, or maybe tomorrow?
Right.
Because we don't know when it's going to hit again.
Now, I want to shift gears here
sure.
for a little bit here, because I know we have only about 13, 14 minutes left.
Oh, didn't I get that?
And the title of your book is God as Mother.
Yes, God as Mother.
And like I said earlier, the two of us are going to be speakers at a conference September 16th, 17th, and 18th in Sedona called I'm blocking.
The Divine Feminine.
Celebrating the Divine Feminine. Thank you. I want to make sure that we talk a little bit about what the conference is about, but, I mean, the title of your book and what I read in it basically is what the conference is about. So what do you mean is God is Mother? And I know, again, that could be three or four shows.
Yeah, I know. How can we do this in a
quick notes of that, and how is it fitting into celebrating the Divine Feminine?
Well, basically, it's this. I'm gonna try to put this in a nutshell here. One thing I loved about Marie's work is that she talked about things pre-Big Bang. This is during the state where everything is oneness, not allness, which is what we have now, which is all these elements that make up the one. We're talking about pure oneness. It's all one. And basically what she's saying is that oneness had four aspects to its being. It's like taking a pie and cutting it in four pieces. Well, in her work, she says, she describes that one of these pieces is purely feminine. The other three, purely masculine. The one that has only one part, the one part, has a purely selfless state. There's no ego in that. The other three has itself. In other words, it's ego. The one part, that's the feminine part, is activated. The three masculine parts are still lying in a state of potentiality along with its consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That one part ends up being the first soul. The other three parts end up being the Trinity Creator once it's born.
Mm-hmm.
So she divides that feminine principle. But this is what's so amazing about it, is that the fetus in the mother's womb is purely feminine for the first couple of weeks, and its masculine aspects are lying in a state of potentiality. It's not that they're not there. They're just still lying in a state of potentiality. Well, it matched up with Marie's concept of how the Trinity Creator had come into being. And I just find it fascinating because she says there's nine stages and steps to creation. Well, when she said that these nine stages and steps were symbolized in the Roman numerals, and when you get to Roman numeral X is 10, right? Look at the word existence. X is tense.
Mm-hmm.
Built right in there. She says anything you want to know about life is completely encoded in our language, and guess who had a lot to do with that? Sir Francis Bacon.
Uh-huh.
Because that was during the times, he was around the times where dictionaries were starting to come up, and of course, he rewrote the King James Bible. He was responsible for that, for the editing of that. So, of course, he infused it with life and all sorts of things. So, anyway, that gives you sort of a rough of idea of basically what she saw God as. So God, the reason why she said God is mother was not because there was no masculine aspect to it, because when that birth occurred, when that Trinity came to birth, they took with it all of the feminine's creative ability. And the feminine part, that oneness, actually became the essence with which God created.
Mm-hmm.
God meaning the Trinity at that point. So that's the reason why we don't have, that's the pyramid cap that's missing. That's the divine feminine. That's what the teachings that were being hidden. Because at the time, they couldn't come and say, oh, yes, well, God is a mother. No, because this was at a time where the men were in charge, so to speak.
Right, right. Well, actually, one of the things I really loved about Marie and your translation of Marie.
Right.
I won't say interpretation because I really saw you as translating.
Right.
Is it put to rest in my mind, not that there really was one, but it gave me a greater understanding that there is no difference between evolution and creationism.
No.
Because
not at
what
all.
You're describing here is that creationism was evolution.
Exactly.
Instead of it being in 7 days and, you know, this on this day and that day, you actually describe in this book how creation was really done by that one.
Right.
And that it was a creative process that took an evolutionary path.
That's right.
And that just coalesced it all for me beautifully.
And one of the primary features that I loved about her work was she said that this oneness was a purely selfless state, and its nature was to give, to share itself with anything, anyone outside of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But think about it. There was nothing else that existed but itself.
Right.
So if this oneness needed to share itself,
right,
and there was nothing else, of course it's going to sacrifice all of it. That's its nature.
Right.
It's the only way it can go. And that's where it becomes the essence of its own creation. Can you imagine the love? And that is why I always believe that the very thing that God, the whole reason for our coming into being is so that it could love other than itself. Is the very thing that what we have to do to be able to get back.
Right. Now let's talk about the conference.
Yes.
What's the purpose and intention of the conference, and what are you going to be doing there?
Well, basically, I'm going to be going through the 9 stages and steps of creation. This is all based on the secret teachings of Mary Magdalene. And then I'll be doing a whole a workshop the next day, on which I'm very excited about as well. I'm going to do the Path of Selfless Love, which is based on the movie What the Bleep, except you're going to hear a lot about transcendence of the ego and the awareness of the soul, because I differentiate between awareness and consciousness. This is what one of the primary features of Marie's work, and I took that to another whole height. And so I'm very excited about sharing that, and it's very exciting to see where we're all moving, and it encompasses quantum physics, creating your realities, except you're going to hear a lot of words like love and purpose as well.
Well, good. I'm praying that they don't schedule our workshops against us at the same time.
No,
because
I really want to be able to attend
yours. Because the title of mine is The Goddess Wears a Beard.
I love it.
And it's a workshop on reconciliation, and the first paragraph in my proposal is, the ultimate goal of this workshop is for men and women to see each other as their natural and true partners on their path to a greater consciousness of peace and healing on the planet. It is intended for all to experience their inner male and female energies as an integrated whole in one, instead of the internal battles that spill out into an already embattled world around us. So it's actually going to be an experiential thing. I mean, there'll be information. In fact, reading your book, as far as I've gone, has given me a bit of my outline, too.
There you go.
You know, to me, it's an important thing that there's so much separation in the world, and to reconcile the attitudes throughout history and today that men have towards women and women have towards men, and our own inner masculine and feminine, that healing has to take place for the oneness to occur.
Absolutely. Well, I think what happens when you do heal, you have access to more of your own innate, how can I say, the powerful forces within you. I think it's necessary and required for life. I think you have to observe both. I think you have to encompass and embrace both sides.
I agree.
Or you're not whole. It's like leaving a piece of you behind. You know what I'm saying? You know, that part of you that you went through some sort of an experience and you got broken down by it. And so what happens, we tend to leave pieces of ourselves in the past. That's how important it is to rediscover all those pieces and bring them forward, and that's even the ones that we have now that we think are split up when, in fact, they are only one.
I agree. Now, how can people get in touch with you? How can they get a copy of your book? Do you have a website people can go to?
Yes, I do. I have a website that is godasmother.org, O-R-G, godasmother.org.
And they can order a copy of the book from the website?
Absolutely.
And they
can
get it on Amazon?
Alexandria 2 Bookstore in
Pasadena. That's right. You own Alexandria 2 Bookstores just in L.A.?
Yes, L.A. or Bodhi Tree in L.A. Or they can call Barnes & Noble. Borders. Borders is real good to buy from, too.
Okay.
I think Amazon.com has some.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as I always tell people, if you couldn't write any of that down and you forget, you can always go to my website for the show, tellthetruthfaster.com. And this show, if you want to hear it again, if there was so much being said that you couldn't absorb it all, which is usually the case for me, you can listen to it again in a couple of weeks. It'll be archived on there, and you can pass it on to some friends. You can also email Victoria Jennings through me if you didn't get her information down, or you can email me. I always like to hear from you and what you thought of the show and how it affected you. So, Victoria, I also want to say, first of all, I'm truly hoping that we can get together before the conference, because I would really love to sit in your presence and talk more.
Oh, thank you. The same here. We tend to live so closely. This is very
I know
for everybody out there. You just have to know we live so close, and we didn't even know.
I know. So, you know, and again, if it wasn't for this conference, it's like a couple of the speakers, Sandra Ray has been a guest on my show a couple of times. Daniel Brinkley was on the show a few months ago. And between now and September, I intend to have a few other presenters, and hopefully maybe Daniel on the show again. Because, again, the consciousness of this workshop is about bringing men and women together.
That's right, that's right.
And even though it's celebrating the divine feminine, it's really attracting a lot of men who are either working on that journey themselves,
right,
within themselves, or who are teachers of that in terms of the feminine energy. I mean, there's been, you know, throughout history, like Gandhi and Jesus and so many others that have been models of men embracing their feminine spiritual powers and creating great healings in the world.
Well, that's the basis for my work on the path of selfless love, because that selfless love is what I want to be able to create my reality with, and I'm finding out that it's the ego that suffers and not the spirit. So,
well,
I'm
hoping
people
will join
us. I want to
end with reading one sentence from page 128, and it's going to be my benediction in all ceremonies from now on. May the wisdom of love and life understanding manifest and express itself within you through selfless and self-humbled service. And with that, I want to thank you for being on the show. I want to thank my listeners. Again, this is Stuart Ultraline on KXAM, 1310 a.m. in Phoenix. Be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
That I heard of once in a life.